Here's the Yuletide for Fran Ben Rav Asher Anshel, the one who's a Shia, all the Shiurim are dedicated in his memory, so it should be a special chus this particular morning. We left off last week, we were talking about the mitzvah of Asher Challah. We mentioned that the din is that if you make a very, very small dough, so one is not obligated in Farsh Chal. It doesn't matter whether it's a bread dough, a matzah dough, a cake dough, cook dough, no matter what it is. If it doesn't have the volume of the shear of Farsh Chal, so one is not obligated in Farsh Chal. What is the shear? So the Torah Shabbat explains to us that it's based on Rishis Ariso Seichem, Kidei Isaschem, the size of a dough that the Kodesh Baruch Hu was speaking to at the time of Matan Torah. So Klal Yisrael, at the time of Matan Torah, knew what the dough was, because the only dough that they knew was the dough of the man, the Omra Siris Eifahu. Not this week's Parsha, next week's coming Parsha, Parsha the Shalach. So the Mishnah makes a calculation, and Rashi quotes it every couple of dafim or so in the Gemara, every couple hundred dafim, so Rashi quotes it, every place in Chumash Rashi quotes the same calculation. It's one of those numbers I can never really figure out, but it all bottom line, it all boils down to 43 and a fifth eggs worth of flour in order to be chayav and challah. So we mentioned last week that whenever we deal with those kinds of shiurim, it's always hard to know how to put that, practically speaking, into today's numbers. So we gave some kind of guidelines, a little bit of some parameters, what that means, practically speaking. The halacha tells us that what if you have multiple doughs, and I want to combine them together in order to be chayav and challah. So each individual dough is not quite half the shiur, but I want to mix them together to make them into one dough. So the sugya, the third parak of Maseches Pesachim, has a famous discussion with big matzahs about the principle it's called sal mitzarif, tziruf sal. You take different doughs and put them together into a basket, and that's considered to be mitzarif them together. That putting into a basket does not have to happen when they're even in the state of dough. It could happen in the state when the lechem also, they're ready baked. Because even though lechetchil is supposed to be mafish challah from the isa, from the dough, but for whatever reason you didn't get around to it, so you could still take off a piece of challah, even after it's ready baked. So if I have, let's say, I baked a couple of rolls now, and then a couple of hours later I bake a few more rolls, and tomorrow I bake another few rolls, and each one didn't have the shiur of challah, but if I throw them all into one basket together, then they do become chayav and challah. That's what's called tzir of sal. So we do that in the matzah bakeries. The matzah bakeries, they don't separate the challah when they're in the middle of preparing the matzahs, when they're in the middle of making the dough. We don't want to waste any time. They have to sit around and dray around for an extra couple of minutes to be mafish challah. So what they do is they bake up all the matzahs first, then they take all the matzahs and they throw them into a big basket, and do a tier of salt, and they take off one piece of one of the matzahs, and that's a fresh challah for the entire batch. So we do rely nice on tier of salt. In our own homes, also sometimes we rely on a tzir of sal. Well, it's not mechuyev to be mitzarif the dishes together. Let's say you really make it two separate doughs, and you don't want them to be mitzarif yachem. So don't. You have mechuyev to go run to make yourself chayav and challah. But the women like to do that. It's a challah baking event. It's a something or other. It's a chus for something. Whatever it is, somehow first challah became connected to the esoteric world. So for people who want to do those kinds of things, so they want to be yetzir. It's a good thing. It's a nice thing to be yetzir mitzvahs. So they want to be mitzarif the isas together. Good gigs of dates, some mitzarif the isas together. So that's what people do. So you can be mitzarif the isas, you can join together the doughs in multiple ways. Either you can do it through a tzir of sal, or technically the doughs touch each other and they literally kiss each other, they hug each other, they start to, to drag a little dough. Let's see, two doughs that touch each other, so they clump together a little bit. So that's also considered to be a tzir. So you can either throw it into a basket together, you can put it together on the table, as long as they touch each other and eat away at each other, that would also be okay. The Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rishonim that for tzir sal, it doesn't even have to be in mamish in sal. It can be covered over with a blanket, covered over with a towel, a napkin or something. That's usually what we do. So whenever we have multiple doughs, my wife wants to be mafish challah, so we'll throw them into a big bowl together as a shiloh, because usually some of the doughs on top of the bowl may not be mitzuruf, because that's not in the sal. So I'll take a towel and throw a towel on top of the whole bowl, and then it's for sure mitzuruf yachad. It's considered halachli, like one sal. Then you can go ahead and be mafish challah from that. There's a shayla in the poskim about whether tzir of sal happens if you're not intending it to happen. This is a question that the poskim raised. Let's say I have a lot of things that we're not obligated in challah. They bake a small batch of cookies and a small thing of cake and something, and none of them are really chayav in challah. And then I take them all and I put them into the freezer together. So some poskim say, oh, wait a second, hold the phone. Maybe the freezer is one big sal. So maybe it was just the tzar if all the stuff together. So my mindset is, it's a small cake, it's a small batch, it's a small nothing. So where's the tziruf? So no, the tziruf happens. That's the machlekes of poskim, two different counts. So first of all, some poskim say tziruf sal only happens when you want it to happen. If I wasn't planning on being mitzvah, if I put it into the fridge together, and now it happens to be that it's quote unquote mitzvah, that doesn't count to obligate me in challah. And others disagree with that. And then there are others who say that the Tzir of Sal only applies when you have the items themselves inside one big kli. But what if you have items inside, each one in its own small container, and then the containers themselves are inside a big kli? So when you put a batch of cookies or something into the freezer, so the cookies are not just thrown to they're in a bag, they're in a container, they're in something. So they're in one gun container, and then you have the other cookies in another container, another cookie in another container. So each one's in its own container. So then maybe they're not mature for Yachad. So each one of those shaylas are questionable. So most people don't think about this. Well, the average person is not sitting around and counting in his freezer as to what was mature, not mature for Yachad. So probably one of these two reasons are probably going to work. Folks can point this out at Purim time. Very often you get hamitash from people. So it's quite possible that the people were not mafresh chal on the hamitash because they probably came from smaller, depends on how many friends the people had. They didn't have too many friends, so then they weren't such big isos, so they probably weren't mafresh chal. We mentioned last week that hamitash probably require a fresh chal because they're a thick dough that's baked, so it's hard to find anybody who says the part. You can find someone who says it. There's a chashukhan that claims that anything that's made like a just for dessert, a Danish kind of a thing, a cookie-ish kind of thing, so even if it's a thick dough, maybe potter, but most Poskim didn't accept that. So Hamitash are probably chayef in challah, so a lot of people are not mafish chal for Hamitash because they don't make big enough batches. So the Poskim write, Meruchos Purim, if you want to be machmir, when you get a lot of Hamitash from a lot of people, you stick them all to the freezer together, maybe you should take off a piece to be mafish challah. But most people are not thinking about that the day after Purim, so they're relying on one of these two things. Either relying on the fact that Tzir of Sal doesn't happen when you weren't thinking it happening, or number two, since each Hamitash is there, each couple of Hamitash are in their own little baggy or something, so maybe they're not Mitzurif Biyachim. So the bottom line is we have our Challah, so we were Mafresh the Challah, and we, if it was Chayav B'Torah's Bada, then we're Mafresh it with a Bracha. For whatever reason, we weren't sure it was Chayav, so we're Mafresh it without a Bracha, now we have this Challah. So what exactly are we supposed to do with this challah? So the chor is supposed to give it to a kohen. That's what the mitzvah satar is. Whenever you have true mecha, it's supposed to give it to a kohen. So we mentioned when we first started the loss of challah that technically speaking, you probably could give it to a kohen. This man is that, and a kohen probably could use it to some degree because the Gemara says that since it's only challah chutz la'aretz, so challah chutz la'aretz is very, very lenient. And as long as the kohen doesn't have a tumah yislam a gufa, as long as he's not a zav or something like that, so then he could technically eat the chal. The fact that he's tummy tumas mace doesn't have efer paraduma, so for these dinder abon chal, it doesn't really concern us too much. So we really could potentially, theoretically, give it to a kohen. Any kohen ever got chal? No, never received chal. Okay. So the reason why I haven't received chal is probably because the last couple hundred years, we haven't been giving chal to the kohanim. There are questions why exactly. This goes back to the old story. There's always one of the posts who always throws to the same pickbook. How do you know he's a kohen? Maybe he's not a kohen. Maybe he's a suffolk kohen. You know, those old stories we spoke about many, many times. But the Magen Avraham writes that in his days, he used to still give challah once a year. Never pays it. They would give some challah to the kohanim. They should eat it. Just everyone should know that they're really kohanim. No one should be mafafuk and the kohuna. But I don't think that minhag has it got lost since Poland in the 1500s. So the bottom line is we're not going to give it to the kohen. So what are we going to do with it? So we're going to discard it. So how are we going to discard it? So the din is, when you have truma tmeya, you have challah tmeya, so then you're supposed to burn it. There is a shayla in the Rishonim, are you mamish b'chuv to burn it? What if you don't burn it? What if you discard it in other kinds of ways? So we lechet chila, we try to burn the challah if you're able to. For those who are not able to burn the challah, so they should discard it in other ways. They should wrap it up in a mechubitik way. You shouldn't just throw it into the garbage. So you put it, wrap it up in a baggie or something, and you put it away, you discard it in a way that's not derech b'zoya. Some people get weary about burning challah in our our houses are. So every time you start something, a little smoke, you get to get from a chanukah camp, all of a sudden the entire Burgerville Police Department, Fire Department is here. So people who are nervous, they're going to forget the challahs in the oven, and they're going to start smoking up the oven in the kitchen and all stories. So if you're nervous about it, so you just wrap it up in a baggie and throw it out. You're not such a nervous kind of a guy, so then you, or a girl, whatever it is, whoever's in charge. So you discard it like in the old style way. Way of doing it, whatever it is. Anyway, how much challah should we really be mafresh? So here it depends on what you do with the challah. In the old days, we're going to give the challah to the kohen, so it's supposed to be mafresh a nice amount. For that, you're kind of different shiurim, around 24th or 148, depending whether you're a private person, a baker, a whole cheshbon, to try to give the kohen something to eat. Why do you have to make sure to give the kohen something that's significant? So Rashi and Chumash points out that there are two psukim speak about challah. One says, whatever it is, any smallest amount, even the smallest amount is good enough. And then it says, Titnu Lashem Truma, Lashem Nesina. So Rashi says, in one place Rashi says, a filu kol shu, and the next place Rashi says that you should give something that's mechubet, something that the kohen can actually use. So the Rebbe points out, it's not a steer ram, it's one Rashi, one posuk apart. So the Rebbe points out, what Rashi's driving at is that when you're talking about to be mata the isa, just to get rid of the tevel, so that's like truma, chita achas p'derech sakri, even the smallest amount is good enough. He said last week, you just mafresh a few crumbs and call it a day. But for the mitzvah of the sinas chal al kohen, so for that, you should give a double mechubet. You should give something that he's going to be able to use. So in the olden days, when we actually gave the challah to the kohen, it's not right just to separate a little piece. That's the yoytzei in the mitzvah of Russia, and the dough is no longer tevel, but you're not going to really fulfill the mitzvah of the seder properly. Because manazeh, no one's giving it to the kohen anyway. So it's a question of burning this amount, or burning that amount. So why should you use extra? The same way, because manazeh, we're mafresh truma, the parents of Meretz Yisrael, we're not mafresh a 40th, 50th, 60th. We throw more into the garbage. So we just mafresh a kol shu in order to be mata the issa tevil. So that's what our practice is today, that we don't sit around in cheshbin that we be about 24th or 48th, depending on when you're a balabas or a baker. You just give whatever smallest amount. So there are more quotes in the minute to give a kezayis. Just take off a kezayis. Okay. This is not a din derayis, so you don't have to be mafresh for chazanish kezayis on this. Take a little kezayis. My wife always says, look, it's like an olive. For this, you can look at it, take a look. It looks pretty much like an olive. Again, even if you don't do that, if you're less than a kezayis, it will be good. There's no real halacha of a kezayis. It's not many Yisrael to give it. It should be a little, it should look a little bit like some kind of a farshas challah. And then again, then one discards the challah. Okay, so that's pretty much in terms of this part of Chuskashas. We'll move on to the next topic. So we're still keeping away from the animal world yet, because once we enter into the animal world, then we're here for maybe 2 years to stay. So we're still keeping the world of vegetables, the world of plants. So we'll try to talk a little bit about some of the other halachas that are relevant in terms of kashas, in terms of non-animal products as of yet. So there is a whole area of halacha that we don't think about too much, but once in a blue moon it can come up, and those are the issues related to kilayim. So kilayim are really twofold issues. There's an issue of what you're not allowed to do, different kinds of kilayim, different kind of mixes of species that you're not allowed to do, and then there are after the fact consequences if a person went ahead and violated kilayim. So what are the ramifications of what grows from the kilayim in terms of achus kashrus? So there are really multiple different kinds of kilayim. We're not talking about the shatnez part now. We're not talking about animals in terms of marvia behemoth, that kind of stuff. We're talking about just within the potential impact on kashrus. So there is kilei zroim, there's kilei hakerem, there's a karvas ilan. So kilei zroim is mixing different kinds of seeds, different kinds of vegetables, planting them right on top of each other. So that's also, that's an issue called sarcho, sizra kilayim. So one is not allowed to do that. However, the halacha tells us that if one went ahead and did that, so b'di'eved, whatever grew is permissible. It doesn't create, it's an issa deraisa, gives you malchus, but it doesn't create any consequences for the subsequent things that grow. So kilei zroim is not going to impact the chutz kashrus. For that matter, kilei zroim is not going to impact us in chutz la'aretz either, because kilayim is a mitzvah ha'tluya b'aretz. It's an agricultural bound mitzvah, and therefore it applies only in Eretz Yisrael. We've spoken about this many times, and hopefully at some point, in some shape or form, we get to Sugyos of Shemitah, whether in this context or another context. I know Shemitah's here. I know we haven't spoken about it too much yet this year, but don't worry. It's first becoming more relevant for us today. But when we talk about Shemitah a little bit, so we'll talk a lot about the status of Eretz Yisrael b'zman hazeh. Does Eretz Yisrael have kedushas haaretz and its full force agriculturally b'zman hazeh? So according to many poskim, we seem to accept the halacha. It's called Kedusha Shnil Abatla. The Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, the second time around, is still intact. The Kedusha of Yoshua was this Batla, and the Kedusha of Ezra is still around. Why that so? Psukim Tzvar, that's already a whole other world. But Lamais, that's generally where we follow the Shittas of Rambam. The Kedusha Shnia is Kayemes Bizman Hazeh. The only thing is, the Rambam, for technical reasons, tells you that just about all the mitzvah Tloid Baretz don't apply Bizman Hazeh Midaraisa, each one for its own reason. So let's say, for example, challah doesn't apply in the Torah because we're missing Bias Kulchem, we said, since the most of Klai Yisrael didn't return. So even the days of Ezra was only the Rabbanim. Trumas and Isis, the Ram is a Chiddush Gadol that also doesn't apply in the Torah, but it's also lacking Bias Kulchem, which other Rishon question where the Ram got that from. It's a whole other and whole other world. Then the Ram says that Shemitah, by the way, also only applies with the Rabbanim. As Machlik is, why is that? It's a further question, why should that even be true? And everything we knock out, everything is this darabon, that darabon, this darabon, but Kedusha Arts is still Kayemis. So the post can throw their hands up and say something. So wait a second, what does that mean? So the Kedusha of agriculture is in full force in Eretz Yisrael today. For what? for truma, nish for baisis, nish for shemitah, nish for chal, nish for what? For kilayim. Oh, that's one of the next time you're planting kilay drum. That's one of the examples. Or for matnas kahut, matnas aniyim. If you want to be yotze, lechat shechopeah. So when we had our big trip near Meach a couple of years ago, and we did all our mitzvahs akerem, all our peret shicha, and all that kind of stuff. So yotze the mitzvah deraisa according to Shiur Rambam, because the Eretz is all in full force kedusha b'zman hazeh, except for the fact that there's no truma, no maisa, no challah, no shvita. Otherwise, we're in full force kedusha. So kilei zeroim is still good to go in Eretz Yisrael. What about the chutz la'aretz? So the Gemara says that Chazal never extended that to chutz la'aretz. It never made a din d'rabbanan chutz la'aretz. The general starting point is that the mitzvahs atzlus b'aretz do not apply in chutz la'aretz. Not min haTorah, not min d'rabbanan. There are a few places in chutz la'aretz where tumas and maisos do apply mid rabbanan. There are Eretz Tasmuchos, Bavel, Mitzrayim, a couple of places here and there. But for us, so mitzvah tumas b'aretz don't really apply. Not mid Torah, not mid rabbanan. There's a long tesis in Maseches Chulin that wasn't so sure about that. The tesis shows it from a few makaris and shas that sound like you have to be makfish tumas and maisos mid rabbanan even in chutz la'aretz. So Tosis is very, very bothered. How come we don't do this? And Tosis tries and tries to show you what it's based on. So at the end, they come up with some kind of different solutions. While the Maisa, we don't separate Tumas and Maisa. I'm meaning it's like that, Tosis. We don't separate Tumas and Maisa. And Chutzlos, unless if you happen to be visiting in Egypt or in Iraq or in these places which are nearby, Teretz Yisrael, so then you have to figure out whether you're in the area of Eretz Tasmuchos or not. But if you're in America, so then you don't have to worry about Tumas and Maisa. It's not Minotaur, not Minotaur. There are two fascinating Tosis about the topic of Trumas and Maisos in Chutz La'aretz. One is in Chulin, where he talks about Midir Rabbanan, and then in Gittin, where Tosfos talks about maybe Midir Raisa, you have to separate Trumas and Maisos, because maybe France is considered halachically to be part of Eretz Yisrael. Why is that? Because the Gemara in the beginning of Gittin talks about the Gulas Aretz, that you have to, let's say you have an island a little bit off the west coast of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara has a whole discussion about, is that island part of Eretz Yisrael? So we pass in the halacha that you have to draw lines, you draw parallel lines, you draw from the top, whatever you think the border of the top is, then you draw the bottom, wherever you think that is, so you have to learn to figure out what the borders are, and then anything within those two parallel lines, if it's the little Iye Hayam, the little islands, are considered to be halachically part of Eretz Yisrael, and Trumas and Maisos would be knowing them in the Torah. So Tosfos makes a cheshbon, and they say, if you continue drawing that line, so you're going to bump into where we live, so why aren't we considered to be part of Eretz Yisrael? So you can't blame that they didn't have a globe, they didn't know the no one had maps of the world that time. So where Balai Tosfos live wasn't exactly connected. So if you go down a little bit, you go down to Spain, so Taka would be. If you continue drawing a little bit further, you get to South Carolina, Charleston is Mamish Kenegan. If you keep on going, you hit LA. LA, Mamish, you draw a straight line as the crow flies from not the Great Circle, we're going straight. So we literally go from Eretz Yisrael to LA. So I told them this story many times. I was once during Sfiras Omer in LA. And the guys were talking about when the earliest time to count, we're talking about Sfiras Gichon, the earliest time to count Sfiras Omer. So I said that the minig in Yerushalayim is 21 minutes, the old minig in Yerushalayim, so they already count Sfira, about 20 minutes or so after Rosh Kia. So I said, I think we could rely on that Mikra in LA also. So everybody said, what? You're crazy, there's not Eretz Yisrael, it's not Yerushalayim. What are you talking about? It's 45 minutes. I said, what? I said, 45 minutes, that's if you live in New York. I said, the sun sets at the same angle in Yerushalayim as it does in L.A. So I said, it's the same whatever number it is in Yerushalayim. So they couldn't be masking. There's no one from Makabah what I said. They thought it was absolute apocryphal. They said, no, whatever the Zman is in New York, it's the Zman in L.A. Because the people who came to L.A. came from New York. So they thought that they didn't realize that it's sunny and nice and it's cold in New York. They didn't realize there's a difference. Nobody chap that the weather is closer in Yerushalayim than it is to New York. Okay, anyway, back to the story. So Tosfos says, Akash, how come we don't separate Tumas and Maisos from the Torah? I mean, why don't we separate all the mitzvahs of Eretz? Because we're all considered to be part of Eretz Yisrael. So Tosfos has a lot of different answers to this step. So one of the answers Tosfos says is that Chiddush of Torah, that the islands become bottled to Eretz Yisrael, that's if it's an island, not if it's a continent. So an island means you have a little Cyprus, a little something around it, tucked away in the middle of the Mediterranean. So maybe that takes on the status as bottled to Eretz Yisrael. The whole Europe is about the whole North America. They didn't know about the whole world is bottled to Eretz Yisrael because it's in the same parallels. Tosfos says that doesn't make any sense. The bottom line is we don't observe the mitzvah of Tumas b'aretz in Chutz La'aretz. So Kilei Zeroim is no different, and we don't observe that in Chutz La'aretz. But the Gemara says that Kilei HaKerem is a different story, because Kilei HaKerem means that you have first you have Kilei Zeroim, you have wheat and barley together, and then you throw in grapes for good luck also. So that's much, much, much more serious. That's called losizra kamrecha kelayim. And not only is that usur to do, but if you do that, then there are repercussions. There are consequences for what you did, that all the resulting, whatever grew, becomes now usur b'achilu b'hanoa midah araisa. It says, b'tikdash v'lei azer asher tizos v'os akarim. So the Tosha Lepe explains to us that tikdash is a loshim tukad eish. That if you do this, then you have to burn it, because it now becomes usur b'achilu usur b'hanoa midah Torah. So Kili HaKerem also, Min HaTorah, only applies in Eretz Yisrael, does not apply in Chutz La'aretz. But here Chazal made a din midrabban. Here Chazal said that Kili HaKerem applies even in Chutz La'aretz. But why did they make this chumah midrabban? Manishtana Kili Yisrael from Kili HaKerem, so the Gemara explains, that Kili Yisrael is a very, very low level halacha, very, very light kind of halacha. Haraya, it doesn't create Yisurim after the fact, but the Eved, everything that grows is okay. Kili HaKerem is so chumah that it's also the Eved. So then Chazal said, this is ready to come for us. So therefore, we're going to make it Issa Derabbanan in Chutz La'aretz. So the bottom line is, if you grow Kili HaKerem, so then that could pose a problem even on this very block. So we had some Kilayim Shailas down the block. So they were hacking me about, they had grapes, they had other things. I don't know, what, I couldn't figure out what was going on. In the end, I don't think anything ever grew. So I don't think we ever had any problems. But in theory, if you learn Kilayim and you figure out what any of those diagrams mean, and you work hard enough, so then you could figure out a way to violate the Isser of Kilayim Kerem, so then you could potentially have problems. But again, 99.99% of the time, we don't have too many problems, at least in Chazan. In Eretz Yisrael, I know you always see in the bottles of wine, they say, Noki Mechashash Kilayim Kerem. I don't know if ever... Is there ever Kila Kerem anywhere? I have no idea. But it always says, Naki Mechashash Kila Kerem, make sure that there's no concern. But if it would be a concern, you would have a big problem. Okay. The other kind of Kilayah that we mentioned is Kavas Ilan. You're not allowed to graft trees. So that actually applies to Chutzot Tzivim Midaraisa. You're not allowed to graft trees. That's a whole sugya in the Gemara about that. And according to some, that may even apply to Goyim. Even though it's not officially from the Shem Mitzvah Bnei Noach, it may be an added mitzvah that may also. It's Chukosai Tishmoru, Chukim Shechakti L'Chokvar. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin quotes the day that says that this was from the old days, from the days of Adam Rishon already, that Lemineva, Kodesh Baruch already told Adam Rishon that you're not allowed to graft trees. So that's off limits. The only thing is, if you went ahead and you grafted the trees, but the Eved, the fruit is going to be mutter. It's put Lechet Chila to eat the resulting fruit. So we do this all the time. A lot of, what are some of the fruit? We have a lot of things. What do we have? Nectarines, aren't they? Peaches and apricots? No, aren't they? A graft case. So those who are doing these things are violating an issur min haTorah, could be even claimed to be violating an issur min haTorah, but we who are consuming it, so it's had to go. There's nothing wrong with us eating these kinds of things. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva that he says maybe it's not right to make a shechiyanu on this kind of fruit. Because shechiyanu v'kiman v'ginyan l'zman hazeh, thank you, Kadosh Baruch Hu, for giving us the opportunity to enjoy the fruit that the person who did this chayim offers for. It doesn't sound right. So Moshe actually thinks that when you have a new fruit, Tu B'Shvat, then the Yamusin, or Rosh Hashanah, so you take your new fruits, so Moshe doesn't say shechiyanu anyway. But if you lived in a world that says shechiyanu, so you should try not to make a shechiyanu on a grafted fruit. Every year, my wife buys some other bizarre fruit for Rosh Hashanah. So every year I try to look up on Google it to see, is this a graft or not a graft? I don't know what these things are. So if it's a grafted fruit, you shouldn't use Vishakim.
What is the Vishakim
Yisrael
beyond that part
that was
grafted? Like the nectarine, right? You find a nectarine tree now?
There are nectarine trees?
I believe so.
There are? I don't know. I don't know anything about this. I don't know. Let me know. Okay, you do some research. Let me know about the nectarine trees. I don't know.
Why did you show the sale over at Vera?
By buying it. I'm buying it, yeah, I'm I don't know. Not sure. It must have been fairy shifts, which will not eat it. There are some Achronim who say that's the reason why the grafted Esrogim are a problem. Everybody knows that Esrog HaMorkim is possible. That's like a Chagfle Yav. Everybody knows that din, that if you have a grafted Esrog, that it's possible. So the Achronim say, everyone knows it's true, but nobody knows why it's true. So different Achronim trying to give different suggestions. Why is it that possible? You know, we're not in Mil, that's possible. It's no Gemara, no, that's anywhere that's possible, but everybody knows that's possible. So some Achronim write, oh, you might know why it's possible? Because of, it's like a mitzvah of Aveira. Because since the grafted Esrog came about through the violation of HaKavas HaIlan, you grafted a lemon with an Esrog, so that's considered to be like a mitzvah of Aveira. That's what Levush writes. And other Achronim give different reasons why. So they asked Reb Chaim Brisker once, why is an Esrog of Mokum possible? It doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch. It doesn't say anywhere in Shulchan Aruch that Esrog of Mokum is possible. But everybody, every box that you buy an Esrog says, it's Cheskes that will cover. So Reb Chaim responded by saying, it doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch that you can't use an apple either It doesn't have to say in Shulchan Aruch you can't use an apple. Shulchan Aruch says you have to take an esrog. So he says if it's a morgum, it's not an esrog. So it's a new fruit. That's a different kind of fruit. That's an esrog / lemon. That's not an esrog. So you can't take a banana, can't take a pear, can't take a nectarine. So that's not called an esrog. So of course it's going to be puzzle. That's a lamed shavar. There's a difference in the alminim between an esrog apostle and a non-esrog. That's more of a sukkah topic, not for now. Anyway, back to that story. So hilchos kelayim, in terms of hilchos kashrus, has almost zero ramifications for us. Kelly's wrong for sure, not a chutz la'aretz, I'm never going to happen. And anything that's done derech hakov, everything's going to be mutter b'di'evit anyway, so this is not really, really going to be real kashrus. In the olden days, yeah, sugya shleimus about Kili HaKerem, and so much teirus about Kili HaKerem, so much, we spent like six weeks talking about Kili HaKerem, beginning with Babas, Mechitza Kerem, Shanifritza, but practically in America, in Tavshin Pei Beis, it doesn't happen all that much. But lumped together with Kili HaKerem is something that could potentially impact us, and Eretzol for sure impacts us, and even possibly Chutz La'aretz. There are two halachas that always go hand in hand, and that is Orla and Kili HaKerem. We find the Chazal always lumped them together in the same breath. Orla and Kili HaKerem, even though they're really very, very different from one another. Kili HaKerem, we mentioned the things that are growing together. So Orla is a tree that was planted Het HaGomer, but it's within the first 3 years, and it hasn't reached the end of the 3 years of Orla. So then all those fruit are going to be Asi Bechilu Bahano. So Afa Bichain, the Mishnah is always talking about them together. There are certain parallels in Halacha between the two. The Mishnah tells us that if you have Orla, you have Kili HaKerem, so that's what's called Minhag Nisrafim. You have to get rid of them by burning. So how do you know you have to burn? Not everything that's Asa Bahano has to be burned. Say Bas B'chol, you don't have to burn it. Other things, you don't have to burn them. So how do you know these things have to be burned? So Kili HaKerem, it says Beferish, it says Pentikdash Shemalei HaZera, and the Tarshim HaPeh says Tikdash is Lash Tukadesh. But Orla, Taka doesn't say it anywhere. So Taisus throws their hands up and say, where did it come from? So Taisus says, maybe it's derived from Kili HaKerem. Maybe Kili HaKerem and Orla are always the same in a Torah for everything. Taisus is not even sure where this din comes from. But Lamaisa, there is a din that Orla is also, that's definitely from Hilchos Kashrus, that any that's planted in the first 3 years is an Issa Gomer min HaTorah to eat it or to be nene from it. The Gemara derives from Sukkim, the Ralta, the Loso, the Spirio, the Rabbis, Kol HaNos. So you're not allowed to use Orla in any shape or form. Does this din of oil apply outside of Eretz Yisrael? So this is a very, very tricky one. So here the Mishnah in the end of the first parak of Kedushin tells us that oil is neig b'chamokon, that oil applies throughout the world. Even if it's like oil applies, which is hard to understand. Because l'chor, it's a classic mitzvah t'libor, it's agriculturally based, so why in the world should it apply in Chutz La'aretz? So the Gemara quotes a machlokes. So one day the Gemara says that almost a pitoris derabanan, something midrash medina, hilchos medina, something that it sounds like it's only midrabanan. And the other, why they made this is derabanan, we're not quite sure. And then the other day, the Gemara says, no, it's not a din derabanan, it's mamshe din min haTorah. What's the source for it? It's halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So that becomes problematic because the Rambam has this famous klal. Once there's halacha l'moshe m'sinai, how can there be a dissenting view? So the Rav has a whole piece about this Gemara, but I don't understand. How could the Gemara quote one opinion disagrees? Once the Gemara concludes halacha l'moshe m'sinai, so then the first opinion is wrong. So why does the Gemara even bother quoting it if it's still wrong? So there's a whole shtickle tari the Rav once gave in a Yurtzeit drush to try to figure out what the world's going on in that sugya. But l'maisa, we pass the halacha like the conclusion of the Gemara that Orla is noyeg min haTorah, not as a possible chumash, but it's based on halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So therefore, it does speak to us. Orla is important for us, even in Chutz La'aretz. If you had a fruit in the first 3 years, that would be a big problem. You couldn't eat it, you couldn't use it. So that would pose a problem on a level of deraisa based on halacha l'moshe m'sinai. However, the Gemara has a very, very famous statement in that sugya of Orla's Chutz La'aretz, where the Gemara quotes a statement from the Tanoim that if you have Orla's Chutz La'aretz, you're not even sure is Orla, so Suffolk is Lekula. We have a tradition that Suffolk Orla is Lekula. So the Gemara says, how do you understand that? So Bishlama, if you think that Orla in Chutz La'aretz is only midirabanan, so then Safi dirabanan l'kula. But if you think that Orla in Chutz La'aretz is derais, it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai, so then Safik should be l'chumra. So the Gemara posed that question, and one of the Amorim, Rabasi, was asked that question, and he was stumped by that question. How can the Tanoim say b'feirish? The Bryce says b'feirish that Safik Orla's Chutz La'aretz is mutar, but we hold halacha, it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai. How can that be? So the Gemara says that Ishtam kishachada. Rabasi was quiet for an hour. He thought, and he said that the correct answer to this question is that gufa must have been part of the halacha l'moshe m'sinai. That tach nemra halacha, vada aser, and sveka mutar. And that's what the Gemara concludes ultimately, that a very, very strange two-part halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Number one, the fact that orla is aser in the first place was halacha l'moshe m'sinai. And part two is that the fact that safek is mutar, that was also halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So So it's that half a line of the Gemara in Kiddushin that got the whole first chapter of Sefer Shir Shmaitz that got started with that Shaila. How do you understand that? There was a halacha Moshe Mesinai to teach us that suffering Orla is mutter chutzal. The Kodesh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, go down, tell Klal Yisrael that anytime you have suffering Orla is chutzal, it's mutter. What do you mean halacha Mesinai for that? The Rambam's famous sheet is that all sfeikas are mutter b'nei Torah. According to the Rambam, if I'm walking in the street and I find a piece of meat and there's a 50-50 chance that it's chazer, maybe it's kosher, I'm allowed to eat it. B'nei Torah, but yes, Moshe Rabbeinu, that's okay. All sfeikas are only l'chumim in the Rabbanah. So all the achvarim above this kashya, all sveikas are mutter min a Torah anyway. So what do we need halacha Moshe Sinai? Suffolk all is mutter. Typically, they're all sveikas are mutter. So already the Rishonim already above this kashya. The Ran above this kashya. The Rashi is like all the Rishonim above this kashya. So the basic yisod of the Teretz is beyond that scope right now. The basic yisod of the Teretz is that it must be that the degree of sveikas in Hilchos Orla must be a little bit different than in Kol Torah Kula. It could be something that wouldn't have qualified as a Suffolk Lakula Minatora, could qualify as a Suffolk Orla. So what does that mean? So the Ron has a suggestion. Let's say you have a robe. Let's say the odds are that it's probably Orla. So if I have a piece of meat I find on the floor, a piece of potential chazer, and there's an 85% chance that it's chazer, the Rambam would say, you're allowed to eat it? Minatora? That's ridiculous. Even the Rambam agrees that sfeikus amutter, but not robes. If the robe indicates that the majority is that this is treif, so of course minatora, I'm not allowed to eat it. So that's the chiddush of suffolk olos chutzlar. Suffolk olos chutzlar means that even though the odds are stacked against you, tzedakah probably not going to be. It's probably not going to be mutter. Tzedakah probably also. It's still okay. It's still right. Suffolk olos mutter legamre hakol mikol kol tet degomer. Even if you have a very shvach kind of a suffolk. That's what the Ron explains, where the Gemara has a comment in Maseches Brachos in the sixth parak, that whenever you have a shaila, nuchas orlos, chutz loretz, you have a suffix in halacha. One time it says also, one time it says mutter. So the Gemara says, if there's any Bible sheet, any legitimate sheet out there that says that it's mutter, you can eat it. It's fine. Yachid rabim, doesn't matter. Whether it's a das yachid, you can rely on that also. So the Ron says, how does it make any sense? How can I rely on the yachid zech derov? The 90% of the chacham says, oh, so it's treif, it's chayim, it's a nisa deraisa. How can I eat it? No, this is called sofek or the schutzlor. Sofek or the schutzlor is mutter, even against the rov. The Gemara says in Brachas, but the buck stops here, that what if the Tana who says that it's mutter is a Tana that has been rejected the Gamri? It's like a Friday night shiurim. So the Gemara says, what if Beis Shammai holds its mutter? So Beis Hillel holds, it's also Beis Shammai says it's mutter. The Gemara says, Beis Shammai, what if Beis Hillel ain't a mishnah? It's in that context that the Gemara says it. That anything that's a sheet that dechuya legami min halacha, the sheet has been rejected, hakol mikol kol, so then you can't bring it back to life, even for suffolk in Orlos Chutz La'aretz. So that's part of our Friday night discussions as to what point do we say that a sheet is nitches min halacha legami. We're getting back to that story. So Orlos Chutz La'aretz does exist. It's an issa gama min ha-Torah, it's halacha loshem Sinai, but it has certain coolness to it. And the biggest cool that it has is that suffolk is mutter. Then the Gemara goes one step further. The Gemara says that suffolk is so mutter that you don't even have to be mevarer. Normally, if I have sveikus about something, so I have to try my best to be mevarer the suffolk. If I can't be mevarer, so then I fall back, maybe that it's mutter. But by suffolk, all is chutzlar, you don't have to bother wasting your time asking questions. So I'm going to go to the store, I'm going to go buy myself an apple right now. So how do I know? Maybe that apple's from Orla. Maybe, could be, it's a possibility. In theory, if I spend enough time, I'll check the codes, I'll go. We'll make it Orla.com, like Chodesh.com, we'll get Orla.com, I'm going to go check all the codes, I'm going to find out, oh, this apple, that. I'm not mechuyav to do that. No one in Chutz La'aretz is mechuyav to do that, because in Chutz La'aretz, what you don't know doesn't hurt you, in the realm, not in all areas, but in the realm of Orla. You don't know it, it doesn't hurt you. That's the Chiddush HaTorah of Orla's Chutz La'aretz. In Eretz Yisrael, that doesn't apply. In Eretz Yisrael, you have to treat Orla like any other real bona fide Isser, and if you don't know, you better try to find out. So that's why in Eretz Yisrael, you'll see in any reputable hashkacha, we'll bend over backwards to make sure that it's not Orla. So if you look at your bottles of wine, we'll say, Noki Mechashash Orla. If you go to the Badats, you know, go to the stands in the Shuk, it'll say, Noki Mechashash Orla, Hufishtum Semaisis, Noki Mechashash Perishvias, whatever things are thrown for good luck. Noki Mechashash Kiliakarim. It's not Iri Dachas, it's not Shur Nisko, whatever it is, that's the time. So it's Noki Mechashash Orla. In America, nobody does that. I go to now, Grand Essex, they sell a couple of apples, so if you go and look at the apples, no, you don't need anyone to assure you that it's not a mechashash or it's only all the chutz la'aretz and shayin. Unless those fruit are coming from Eretz Yisrael, then the and everything changes. If those fruit are coming from Eretz Yisrael, so then you can't, that's not called Orlus Chutzlar, that's called Orlus Eretz Yisrael. So then we're going to change up next week. We'll try to put the final touches on the din of Orla, how they relate to us, Bizman HaZeh, and then we'll try to move on to other areas.